Are you and your partner ready to take your relationships to the next level? Well, great. We are pleased to announce our phenomenal Couples on Fire May 2024 workshop. This workshop is specifically designed to deepen intimate and emotional bonds, strengthen effective communication, and help you find new ways to easily navigate old conflicts. This workshop will be led by none other than world-renowned Loving Beyond the I Do podcasters and life and relationship coaches of legendary relationship, Jason and Tina Marie. This transformative workshop is tailored to address you, married couples, particular needs and dynamic. Invest in your relationship today and embark on a journey towards lasting and joyous happiness. Now, unfortunately, space availability is limited. Therefore, please reserve your spots today so you don't miss out. And that's Saturday, May 11th, 2024, at 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The price is $150 per couple. Lunch will be provided. The location, Irwin Community Center, Homewood, Illinois. Again, location, Irwin Community Center, Homewood, Illinois. Enroll now and be ready to transform your relationship from ordinary to extraordinary. Take advantage of this opportunity in creating the relationship you truly desire. Secure your spots today by going to legendaryrelationship.com/workshop. Again, legendaryrelationship.com/workshop. You have to be in it to win it.
Welcome to episode number 49. Dr. Ngozi Truth Krishan is the owner, founder of Dr. Truth and Associates, LLC. She's also a licensed eligible clinical psychologist. Her private practice is located in Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Truth has over 15 years of clinical experience working as a mental health therapist within trauma centers, clinics, and schools within the urban community. Dr. Truth wrote and self-published her first solo book on grief entitled Black Girls Cry, 10 Active and Passive Strategies for Healing from the Death of a Loved One. Guys, Dr. Truth is going to come in and she's going to talk to us about some things that we really need to pay attention to. How do we get the relationship we want? There's some things that we need to deal with. I'm not going to waste too much time here. We're just going to go ahead and get into the show. Cue the music.
Welcome to Loving Beyond the I Do podcast. This power couple is building stronger marriages one day at a time. Talking about real issues on love, relationships, and marriage longevity. Let's break down the barriers and engage in healthy conversation with your hosts, Jason and Tina Marie. Take a seat and buckle up because things are about to get real.
Hey, 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 welcome to the show.
Welcome back to another episode of Love and Beyond the I Do.
With your hosts, Jason and Tina Marie.
That's me. Hey, guys, today we have our special guest with us.
Dr. Ngozi Truth Krishan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We're glad to have you. So as we start, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so like Jason said, I'm Dr. Ngozi Truth Krishan. I'm a licensed eligible psychologist. I was based in Chicago, and now I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. So 15 years experience as a mental health therapist. I started off my career working in community mental health, working with traumatized youth on the south side of Chicago and Inglewood area. So I started off my career at Community Mental Health Council, actually, with Dr. Carl Bell, who talks a lot about risk factors and protective factors for trauma and low SES or social economic status type of clientele.
Okay.
And so that's where my heart is, serving patients or clients that are most times given services less often and usually when they're most severe.
Okay.
If it's right here with relationships.
So,
today we're going to get some tips and techniques from Dr. Truth. So tell us, what do you think in dealing with patients like that? have you ever dealt with their parents and dealing with in relationship, how the family dynamics are?
Yes. So whenever you work with youth, so we talk about Bronfenbrenner's model, where we talk about ecosystems and mesosystems and macrosystems and all of those things, and how different systems actually impact the youth. Actually, different systems impact us all, but especially youth. More often, you can't work with a child without working with their parents or their foster parents, as well as looking at their relationship with their peers, their teachers, sometimes social workers, judges, and the like. And also how the city, the state, the community, all those different larger systems and politics actually play into funding for their mental health or impact, even if they receive what is called early Head Start and prevention services, especially when we're talking about low-income families and youth. So, of course, we talk about relationships as it pertains to families. And what we see a lot of times is a risk factor for youth that are exposed to trauma. Well, not all youth, but another risk factor is that there is some maternal depression, paternal criminality, and sometimes they come from single parent family homes. And or are raised by grandmothers or grandfathers or other relatives. Some are raised by cousins and things like that. So when we're talking about marriage, I'm going to relate it to you all in just a second. I'm coming.
Go ahead.
So when we talk about marriage and we talk about the family unit, it does not always look like a two-parent household, but there can still be healthy relationships there. But that's usually the goal that we're trying to get to. Right. Some single parents are still looking for love. Some, even grandparents, are still looking for love. And how does that impact their child and their children, too?
Right. So dealing with the youth, let's say fast forward, right? So you hopefully help them. How do you think that impacts them in relationships as they get older? You're growing up, you're healthy, you're trying to put that all behind you. And I know we talk a lot about, Jason and I, we talk a lot about your past really dictates the type of person you become and whether we realize it or not. So how do you see them in relationships moving forward?
Okay. So we know that children, we know that all people, some of that learning is learned behavior. And so depending on the emotionality, we talk about high emotionality in some families where conflict is high and they don't see resolution of the conflict. Let's just say a domestic violence or persistent yelling, physical
right.
abuse.
Right.
So you things sometimes, that, mm-hmm. yep, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say any type of conflict. It's just you see the conflict, but you don't see the resolution of the conflict.
Or there is no resolution of the conflict. The resolution is somebody going to the hospital or, you know.
Right, it's right. nothing healthy. It's not, it's,
exactly. Yeah. So it may be some unhealthy resolution of the conflict. And most times it's not a conversation after the emotions have subsided
right.
to talk about what went well, what did not go well. And so those are some of the things that we teach in family therapy as well as with the youth to help them when we talk about emotional emancipation circles or peace circles, which are happening in Chicago public schools and other schools, to help children, especially in low-income communities, to then talk through the conversations about the conflict. And so how can we verbally talk through these things and not always jump to physical aggression or you stepped on my shoe, whatever it
is,
oh my God. And then just automatically fighting as a means of resolving conflict.
And so then they begin to relationships.
Exactly.
And then that's where that conflict comes from. And I know we constantly say things like communication is key in a relationship, right? So now you're 30. You're in a marriage or in a relationship and you don't know how to
deal with all your baggage,
how to handle your anger, right? Because you have this issue with anger or conflict. So what is the resolution and how do you help people in their relationship realize where it stemmed from and actually how to help themselves conquer that?
So knowing where it stems from, that's a higher order type of thing that takes self-awareness and or going to a therapist to help point out because it may be unconscious.
Okay.
But the help to manage your own anger first is noticing it and, again, becoming aware that you are having concerns with anger. Mm-hmm. So noticing some of your patterns. So what do you do when you're angry? And anger, again, and this is what I teach my patients, that anger is not a negative emotion. No emotions are negative. All emotions are good. So if you're noticing that you're angry whenever someone is giving you critique or whatever that causes you to be angry, then what can you do to help cope? We call those coping skills. And so one of those ways is to debrief. Another is to walk away. Some people just may need to pause, hold their lips.
Yeah, but it's hard because, right, if you spend 30 years just reacting,
sure.
Now in relationships, the more we get to know each other, the more relaxed we become, right? Mm-hmm. So initially, yeah. You're holding your lip. Now the true person comes out, right? Because we're past that
getting honeymoon to know, stage, right?
We're past that getting to know you. Yeah. I love you. Now we're in a relationship, and now everybody's defenses are down. I don't feel as though I have to put on this front. Mm-hmm. I don't have to hold my lip. So a person recognizes that they are quick to anger or they have anger issues. They say it, but it's not as easily done as holding your lip because it's a habit. Like you said, right. It's a train.
You've been taught not to hold your lip. You've been taught.
Or you just do it.
To fight back.
Right. So you've grown up all your life and that's the norm, just flipping off, right? So how do we recognize?
I want to ask one question. Just hold it just for 1 second. Okay. I want to go back to the part where you said there's no negative emotions. That's the first time I've ever heard that. Now, I heard of good emotions and, you know, you have bad emotions or bad feelings or whatever. That's interesting. So you're saying that anger isn't bad?
No, it's not. Anger tells you, it gives you information about what is going on. So maybe there's some discomfort, some disagreement, whatever, with what's going on in the relationship or in the conversation or whatever that's causing you to become angry. But it's nothing inherently bad about anger.
So I know what makes me mad. I know when I get mad. You're like, it's good. Yeah. It's telling you, you mad. Yeah, I'm mad because of the situation.
Usually what I tell my clients, what comes after the anger is usually what we attach to the bad type of physical reaction that happens after that. So, and then I ask my clients to start naming some things that happen after you become angry, after you, you know, start raising your voice and all those things. Then what comes next? Are you cursing
out the room? Out?
Are you cursing people out? Say it again.
He walks out the room.
Yeah. Are you throwing dishes at people's head like grandma, great grandma used to do? Are, you know, does physical violence come next? Do guns and knives come out? Those right. are some of the negative behaviors that
That's
follow
attached.
Anger.
Okay.
Exactly. So we attach anger to being negative, but you can be angry and you can state that you're angry and not be bad, you know.
I don't have to escalate it with violence or anything.
You don't have to contribute it to something negative.
Right.
Right. Right. You can detach it from just the fact of being angry.
That's interesting.
You shouldn't just express your feelings, and that's what we do in therapy. We try to get people to emotionally express how they're feeling to their partner without judgment and without blame. And that's the key, right?
Yeah.
So I feel I am. When you said blah, 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 I felt this way. So you're not saying you made me because then that's automatically putting the other person on defense.
Are you and your partner ready to take your relationships to the next level? Well, great. We are pleased to announce our phenomenal Couples on Fire May 2024 workshop. This workshop is specifically designed to deepen intimate and emotional bonds, strengthen effective communication, and help you find new ways to easily navigate old conflicts. This workshop will be led by none other than world-renowned Loving Beyond the I Do podcasters and life and relationship coaches of legendary relationship, Jason and Tina Marie. This transformative workshop is tailored to address you, married couples, particular needs, and dynamic. Invest in your relationship today and embark on a journey towards lasting and joyous happiness. Now, unfortunately, space availability is limited. Therefore, please reserve your spots today so you don't miss out. And that's Saturday, May 11th, 2024, at 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., the price is $150 per couple. Lunch will be provided. The location, Irwin Community Center, Homewood, Illinois. Again, location, Irwin Community Center, Homewood, Illinois. Enroll now and be ready to transform your relationship from ordinary to extraordinary. Take advantage of this opportunity in creating the relationship you truly desire. Secure your spots today by going to legendaryrelationship.com /workshop. Again, legendaryrelationship.com/workshop. You have to be in it to win it.
Or what you need to do.
Exactly. What you not gonna do?
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah,
we that had was a podcast episode.
Yeah, we right. had a podcast about the things that we say to one another that kind of get under our skin. Now, after being married close to 30 years,
we didn't say under skin. We said things that should not be said.
Should not be said, right?
So to your spouse, right?
And it was just some of the things that is funny. I mean, we've been married almost 30 years, and I was able to tell her some things that I didn't like, and vice versa. So on that episode, we actually learned some things about what actually bothered us, which was good therapy.
Going back, a person who is not in touch with being able to detach negative behavior with high emotions, how does that happen? Right? So like going back to the 30-year-old, we're in a relationship, we're in a marriage. I'm used to raising my voice and not necessarily throwing things, but the person kind of recognizes they're quick to anger and they don't like that. How do they change it? What are some of the things that they can do to change that from 0 to 500 and help the relationship to actually get to a point where they can talk about it?
Sometimes you can talk to yourself and say, I'm getting angry right now. Let me walk away. Like, seriously, I've done that before. Sometimes even when driving and it's road rage, like, I can't believe you just did that. So instead of cussing them out, I just have a little calm down.
Calm down session.
Myself, exactly. Because again, that's called grounding. When you're bringing yourself back to baseline, you're acknowledging your emotions, you're able to recenter. Sometimes we can't do that exactly in the moment, right?
Right.
When we're high emotion, a lot of times, our thinking is paused. So we're not thinking rationally.
Right, right.
And so I would say therapy too, but also trying to be in touch with what it is that you are feeling and being able to express that in a non-judgmental way to your partner and also to yourself, because sometimes it's not always your partner that triggers the anger. Sometimes it's your own, you know, past. Like you just
exactly, yep. exactly. That's yep. what I was saying. And people don't recognize that. They think that it's normal, and even though they don't like it, they think that's just who I am, right?
Yeah.
But we know that somewhere you were introduced to that, mm-hmm. and it became right. the
it
norm.
Became part of your life.
Right,
yes.
right. So it's somewhere in your past.
And it's something deeper because you're trying to express what your need is to your partner, but you don't know how to do so. So like an example in the book that we're discussing right now. What's the name of my book? Getting the Love That You Want.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Getting the Love That You Want.
And we talked about the baby crying. And so you believe that the louder you are, then the more attention that you're getting, your needs will be met. And so that's what you have learned to do. So that's the pattern that you're repeating in these adult relationships, the same that you repeated in your infant relationships and or relationship, that first primary relationship, which is with your caregiver or mom, dad, or whoever right. raised you.
That was really an eye-opener because it's not only in the crib, which is true, right?
Right.
So you're a baby and you want to be fed. The only way to communicate is to scream, yep. right? And if they don't come immediately when you whine, you get louder. And that really is a revelation as to how we look at getting attention. And then we say when kids act out in school, it's not because they want to, it's because they want attention, right?
Right.
This is a cry of, I'm lacking something and I need for you to help me some type of way. So the more I act out, the louder I get, hopefully the attention I get, which is usually reverse. So then we can see how that goes into a relationship later down the line.
So if we never learn that, if we never learn that by crying and screaming or acting out, if we don't learn that doesn't give us our attention, then when we get to these relationships, we're totally messed up because we're coming in kicking and screaming and acting out. Because we really just want to have love. And if I see something in you and in my, you know, significant other that reminds me of my caregiver and my caregiver didn't give me the love and I feel like now I want it, then I'll start acting out and start yelling and screaming or doing whatever so I can get it. But then she may take it negatively. Now mm-hmm. I'm in a relationship. Now I'm totally unhappy just because I might have seen an act that the other person did that reminded me of someone else. And it's like, this is the time that I really needed love when I was little. And now I want it now. And then I can't get it. So, yeah. I mean, like, we have to really peel back the layers.
In relationships.
In relationships.
And self-development, well, right?
Right, 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 right. All the way back to the youth part of us. Because when we get here to these real grown-up relationships, having these healthy conversations, you understand that, man, it's, all these problems we're having is because of our past.
So do you find that in therapy that parents are more open? So you're dealing with children usually, right? Do you find that when their parents come or if their parents do come, are they kind of open or they're more in denial? As adults, do we sometimes want to hear and face the problems that are real? What do you see adults doing?
You know the answer to that question. many adults, like us all, we want to deny, deflect. It's them. So a lot of times we have to, I don't want to say trick parents, we have to couch the conversation in the best thing for the youth, and you're a major contributor and key component of your child getting better. We need you to shift some of your responses to the youth so that we receive a different result. So for instance, if the child is having these anger episodes or these meltdowns, so we call it emotion dysregulation, when they're like decompensating, crying or self-harming or whatever it is, how can we shift that focus from only on the child's negative behavior? And of course, we're taking into account safety and all those things and removing all the sharp objects and pills and things like that. But when we come back, how do we now validate the youth's emotions when they are expressing all of those emotions, whatever those emotions are on that feelings wheel, to that youth? And also, how do we incorporate more positive interactions between the parent and the child? Because a lot of times that is absent. So do we have family dinner times? Do we have one-on-one with the parent? If we have six children in the household, how can we give that person the attention, the positive attention that they need, versus just yelling, get your over here so you can do it. Yeah. Didn't I tell you to do your chores? I'm not going to tell you again. And you have to continue to repeat and repeat and repeat. When you put these reward systems in place, when we're talking about behavior consequences and rewards, when you put reward systems in place, your child would do those rewards without you even saying anything. If you don't clean your room and do your chores, then you're not getting allowance. So they'll be moving to do it. But what I hear,
not when they hit teenagers.
Okay. If it's no cell phone, then you'll be moving to do it. It's always something that a child wants multiple times.
Take that game away.
But what parents are telling me in response to me telling you, like, this is 1-2-3 magic type of things. What's a book called 1-2-3 Magic, where you can train a child at age 3 to follow your instructions without the yelling and the constant repetitive things? You're the adult, and the child is the child. And a lot of times it's reversed, and the child is taking on the role of the parent in some of these households. And I'm not just talking about low SES. Right now, I work in a residential facility with high SES CEOs, white, of companies who are having trouble with their children, but they don't want to implement some of the systems that I'm saying, as a psychologist, that you need to implement that will help your house run smoother. If you set these rules in place and boundaries, and because we talk about the parallel process, that's another book that we use. And so when we say set these boundaries in place for the rewards, and they're telling me, oh no, I don't want to be mean, I don't want to be strict, but your child is not flushing the toilet, your child has tampons on the floor, your child has garbage everywhere on your bed. No. Then we have to come back to some sense of order, because now we are out of order. And when a child is running the house, we're out of order. Oh. And we have to get back to order, where the parent is in control, and you don't have to be in control up here with high emotionality. You can have your voice down. But they know that your word means your word. So you have to follow through with those behavior consequences as well as behavior rewards. And if you don't, then you will continue to have chaos.
So let's.
I know in the best of times with raising kids, kids put a strain on your relationship. Now, if you have a child that's pretty much out of control or pretty much trying to run the household, that's a tremendous strain on the relationship. How can you, as two people in the relationship, have a healthy relationship as well as trying to combat this?
Even come into order because
getting your house back in order.
Women kind of deal with things differently because we're more of the emotion, right?
Right.
And men kind of deal with things more disciplined or structured.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the happy medium in
for us to get our house back in order? Because this is going to be a strain. Because
you mean us literally?
No.
Oh, because you like for us.
Us you feeling a certain way?
No, you were okay.
Red flag.
Yeah. He was like, for us. I'm like, wait a minute. Are we speaking hypothetically?
No, I meant a couple. So a couple.
Like a married couple.
Like a married couple.
Just any couple, right?
Right. Because I'm just talking to my listeners out there.
Right, exactly.
It's like, I'm in this relationship, and we all have these kids.
Actually, you ain't kidding. So, but I was actually, that kind of goes on the line about this in mixed families.
Oh, yeah. That's
That's where I was going with this next. Yeah. So you have.
Well, don't go there. I want to know. Okay. I want just if we're from the same background, basically.
So same parents.
And now we have an additional strain on our relationship. How do we try to, what emotions or what do we need to try to work on?
What advice would you give couples that are battling each other when the real battle is trying to get your house back in alignment because of the child? Because, you know, I'm just going to let you know, children these days, the stuff that used to work years ago doesn't work today. you see it from a different, you know, aspect. But I'm telling you, the kids of this time and era, they are privy to so much. They are exposed to so much more. Their reach is beyond their intimate four blocks, right, that used to be, right? Their immediate family where they get their information from. Mm-hmm. So now they can turn on Instagram, Facebook, or go
just
on,
get
the,
on
internet,
the internet. Right. And get
and
information.
Now they see all these different things that to them is an eye-opener. It's different. I don't have to listen, or life is different. Like, they just think totally different. How do couples together battle the stay in sync with each other?
I need my relationship to stay strong.
Yeah. What advice would you give people to kind of stay in sync with each other in dealing with the emotions of a child?
Okay. So I just want to say something to what Jason said, just because you said this. No, I think that was Tina. Okay. You said that the woman is usually emotional and the man is usually structured. Sometimes that's switched. So I don't want to say that.
Okay.
That's always true. But so for parents, couples that are dealing with children or a chaotic household or just chaotic behavior, I will say parent coaching and or marriage therapy. Okay. Because the parent coaching and the marriage therapy is going to help you, one, come together in agreement instead of triangulating. That's a term in family therapy, triangulating your child and putting the focus on the child instead, one parent putting the focus on the child instead of their marriage.
Exactly.
So now you're overly focused and overly involved in the child's life to distract from the problems that are going on in your own marriage. Mm. So literally that's usually what comes out in our family sessions, because most people think that the child is the problem. The child is the identified client. The child is not really the client. The family is the client in family therapy. And so our focus in family therapy is I'm the mirror as the therapist, and I'm helping you all, one, become aware of your family patterns. Notice the emotionality between each family member and shift. You choose to shift if you want to. And that's how the family structure, and when we talk about systems, the family system begins to change. So that relationship between the mom and the dad or the wife and the husband, that relationship also has to shift, because when that relationship shifts, then the rest of the family unit functioning will begin to shift. Mm.
So, okay, now let's take that to the dynamics of mixed families, right? So we get married and it's his daughter or her son or his son.
Blended families?
Blended.
Yeah,
blended families. Mm-hmm. Okay, and now you're bringing on, this child is used to that other parent doing things a different way. And they may not be all on board with this whole relationship, or they are on board, but the other person is now dictating from that side
about
what should go.
Oh,
right. So, you know, you have a child in between two homes, basically, right? So you're at the home of your mom and you're at the home of your dad. Now, your dad is remarried with another wife. So, but the mom is still in the ear of the child. How does that new mom, how does she cope with, because, you know, if you say parent therapy or a family therapy, everybody like the other up. Mom is like, it's nothing wrong with me.
Right.
You know,
y'all need to get your house in order.
Right, right, right. It's nothing wrong with me and my daughter. So then you have this battle, and like you said, the focus seems like it's the battle of the child,
yep.
But it's really not. It's the battle of the adults, and so that's usually where the problem stems from, right? The other parent in the ear of the child, which makes the child act out. So suggestions on that, on blended families, because people come into these relationships, and they know this from the beginning. They take it on, but then it turns to a very ugly monster, so... What are some tips and techniques dealing with that? Yeah, first, I know, right?
Yeah, these are challenging situations. So first, all the parents should do an assessment of themselves to see, one, where are they in relation to their own emotions and emotional maturity? Let's just start there.
Yeah, it's probably not gonna happen, right? Yeah, right. Your ex-wife needs to get her emotional intelligence together, you know, and exactly. Emotional maturity. Mm-hmm.
And so if you know that you, as the whoever in this household with the wife or the husband or whoever is the most mature, then you know that you need to be strong. I tell people to do the deep breathing exercises before you have the conversation or the interaction with that parent that you know may press some of your buttons and trigger your triggers, right? So, because again, you are modeling, and this is what I'm teaching family parents, you're modeling for your child how to handle conflict. This is just another conflict, even though it's still a family, even if it is in a different household.
Right.
Right.
So being careful what you're saying and fighting fair still happens. You still have to fight fair, even though you're no longer married and or attached in relationship with this person in the other household. So how
girl,
do we become...
you know, when you're not together, the hidden below the belt is all on the table, right?
I know, but we're talking about healthy.
Right? And so we have to, I guess...
Somebody has to choose the high road. What did Michelle Obama say? When they go low, we go high. Mm-hmm. So who's going to be the one to go high? Because if everybody is going low...
But you know the other people who came in after them, they went real low. And people was accepting that. And people started just following suit. Low really works, but it doesn't. How do you deal with those low people? How do you deal with those low people too? Because they're not going to see. You just, and even in that situation, that's a perfect example. They don't see the high road. Right. And no matter how many times you try to take the high road and be the more mature person, they just don't do it. Now, go back to relationship.
It does work.
You think so?
You teach people how to treat you. So they can go off the handle. You've seen conversations like that when one person is like, and the other person is just standing there like, okay. And what are we doing with our son? Exactly. That's the same kind of reaction that you give them, where it's not being rude to them. It's not going low with them. You're still staying focused on the topic at hand, which is the child. And the child is going to be brought back at 12, okay, and going to have all their belongings. All right. So you're still sticking to the facts, or setting boundaries with that parent that is having the emotional dysregulation right now. I'll speak with you later when you're in a better place or when you're calm. And then just setting those boundaries and rules for how they will treat and or talk to you. And if not, then sometimes we have to take it to court. If it's that severe where you can't have a normal conversation with the parent.
So now it's the child. So now it's the child that's irate. So now you're having a hard time as the other parent, the step-parent.
Okay.
You're having issues with that child. And it's now, like you said before, it's putting a bridge between you and the person you chose to spend your life with, right? You and the mate that you chose. Yeah. It's their child. So now it's the child. How do you, and sometimes it is the child, right? They purposely do things or...
Because they want their parents together.
Right. Yeah, or whatever reason, right?
Yeah.
So how do you get the other mate to see that this is coming between us?
Okay. So the step-parent talking to the parent of the child.
Right.
To get you all on one accord that the child may be trying to separate you all or play one against the other.
Okay.
Okay. So usually that is addressed in therapy. I'm telling you. Because sometimes that's the only way that parent, all three, so step parent and the parents, are going to follow the rules. And sometimes that child also needs to be in therapy as well, because there's something going on between the relationship with them and the step parent. And it's not necessarily always about the step parent. It's just about the fact that they have in their mind that they're, you separated my parents.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Or they have this false idea that their parents are going to get back together. So what I've had children do is to have their parents reiterate to them that they are not getting back together ever, but they still love the child and that they will respect the step parent. And if they don't, then these are the consequences and these are the rewards when you do. Again, setting those firm boundaries with the child. And usually that comes from the parent of the child and not the step parent. But in cases where sometimes it's the stepmother, because mothers traditionally are raising and caring for the children, they have the most interaction with the children a lot of times.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So how does that dad, usually the biological dad, support the stepmom right. in the rearing of the children, where the stepmom doesn't continue to feel caught in the middle and or attacked by the child and the birth mom, because they know that this woman, again, like Freudian, has knocked you off, right, and now right. you're the queen. Right, that's really right, what it's about, right. because yeah. you just took her place. And then allowing the stepmother to know that it's not about her per se, so she should not take it personal, because it's really not personal. And that will help alleviate some of that anxiety for her, and also the biological dad helping the stepmom to support her, help support her in her decision making and setting the boundaries for the children, because they all need, again, you all need to be a united front with that child. It can't be, oh, daddy said I could do this and stepmom said do that. Then that does not look like respect for the stepmother anymore.
Right, right.
Now dad is letting the person off the hook, and then the child is like, nah, 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 you know?
Right. Or sometimes, like you said, the stepmom sets boundaries, mm-hmm. and then the dad feels as right. though maybe they're strict, right?
Right, you're being so too hard on my child.
Right. And so seen different ways. Mm-hmm. So that's a really tough situation, too, when you go into blended families and it's that children are involved.
Well, one thing I've noticed since, you know, speaking with you is this is not a DIY. You really need some professional help with this relationship stuff, especially with blended families and emotions and all of this other stuff, because we just think that we're going to get married and things are going to just
work out
and be fine.
And I guess, again, that comes from background, right? That's just kind of how we see things and how things are done.
Right. But also background, we think going to therapy means that we really have some serious issues and it's looked upon in a negative light.
We do have serious issues.
We do, but we don't want to address that. I don't want them in my business.
We as people.
Right.
So that's I'm glad you said that. That's another question. For couples that one wants therapy and the other one does not, what is that about? Because it's the stigma of something's wrong with you all, or we should be able to work out our own problems, or I don't want to go to counseling for whatever reason. How do you communicate to your mate that therapy really should be an option, but if you go, you need to be honest, right?
Girl, you tell me. This is what I'll say. I will say, find ways, because we have to get people's buy-in into whatever they want, because you can force and one person in the couple may say they brought me here, that's why I'm here.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So exactly. Are you really going to get anything out of it if you really don't want to be there? That's kind of similar to like mandated therapy, where some juveniles have to come to mandated therapy, but they don't want to be there. So they're not going to be honest and open because they don't feel like they need it. Sometimes you still get healing in the room, whether you want to be there or not. But it's kind of difficult if you're choosing not to communicate at all, mm-hmm. or communicate in spurts. So I would say sometimes a little carrot to get there, or if they don't go to therapy, sometimes books. Books are helpful. So like the Gottmans, their books are really, really helpful. And other books, that are sound books from psychology experts. That's what I'm talking about. Not just how to think like a man and, you know, not that.
Right, right. I think like a man and act like a woman, right? That's yes. Some real concrete stuff that's going to actually make you think, right?
Yeah. Or, right. Yes. Research behind it, yeah.
Yes, research-based type of books from therapists or psychologists with letters after their name, LCSW, you know, LPC, things like that. Medical doctors, MDs, that have done the work and have done the research. And this is sound, you know, I don't want to say sound doctrine. Here I go in religion. But yeah, citing the source. And so just having some of those books, even if you're not giving it to your mate, what my parents do, they have it lying around in the bathroom. Then each other will read, like, what's she reading?
Right, what that's true. Reading? That's true, because we know our mate. We know if we lay something down, they're going to pick it up and read it, right? What's she trying to do to now? Right.
Yeah, I just picked up on another secret. Okay, cool. I see something laying around. I'm not going to read it.
You can't help yourself. I'm telling you. You can't.
All
you
these
know what,
years.
You know what's okay. funny? I will leave a note in plain sight for him. For him. Mm-hmm. For him, right? I'll leave it and write it. He won't see it. Nope. If I write something for myself and put it over on the corner up under some books,
yep.
He didn't read it. Yep. You know, right, when you leave it for them, when it's for them, they won't see it, mm-hmm. right?
That's human behavior, but that's Dr. Truth advanced course, so I can't teach y'all all the behind secrets of human behavior, but if you want a man to do something, then I can tell you some things that you need to do.
I'll tell you, okay?
I'm learning a lot here, okay?
That's what a women's only session.
Exactly. That's right. That you're not invited to.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
When we talk about relationships and making them better, what do you think is one of the key components in getting a healthy relationship from an individual standpoint? What do you think is a key component?
I would probably say doing your self-work is one of the key components. And I think that's missing when we talk about couples work. So you have to be able to be aware of where you are, one, emotionally, two, where you've come from as far as your own family upbringing and the relationships that you have seen and or heard about. Because some of us have been raised in households that were chaotic and thought that that was normal and that was love. And so then we take those experiences back to our new relationships, not even knowing that that is not normal,
right,
unless right. somebody is presenting you with the information like, what are you doing? You know,
right.
That's all. And then because again, we're in our, like you said, kind of like our four block or radius or things
that's
like
true.
That. And not knowing that not every marriage works the same, not every relationship works the same, not every household, even that shares custody. So even being able to see a couple that is co-parenting successfully is a shock and awe for some people.
That's true. How do you tell people that that's not normal? Because sometimes, like you said,
you can tell them, but they have to be able to receive that.
But we're in a relationship, uh-huh. and this is not like what I grew up on, right? How do you express to your mate that something wrong with you? You know, like that's not normal.
They should have got that in the honeymoon stage.
No. What if they're not married yet? But I'm serious. But I'm serious. Like sometimes you get married because you love the person. Then you know the honeymoon phase. Right. You don't see any fault. Like everything, you're willing to, if their toenails are real long, you're willing to overlook anything, right?
Because when you get married, you're gonna make sure you cut them. Right. I get it.
Things
are gonna change.
But how do you really, so now you're married past the honeymoon stage or you're in a relationship and just people don't, like you said, that recognizing, sometimes people don't see that that's not normal. How can we in relationships help our mate to see that their behavior is not what all relationships are built on, right?
Sometimes it's not always direct. So, of course, you do not want to say, that ain't normal.
Something wrong with you.
Right. I don't know.
Oh,
that's not going to work, right? Then they're going to get to that escalator point. You're like, yep, see, I told you something that. But
so sometimes having the conversation, asking them about making it distant from their own behavior, because you'll take it less defensively if you talk about your parents or your uncle or your aunt, or what relationships have you seen? How have you seen other relationships deal with conflict? Or what expressions of anger have you seen, and how was that responded to in your parents' relationship? Oh, my parents were divorced. Oh, okay. So that's giving you information, one, as the other person in a couple, but also sometimes that's one way. Another way is just, again, setting the expectations for how the relationship is going to go in your marriage or relationship. For instance, I was brought up eating at the table every night with my parents. If I'm dating somebody that was not, then I'm going to go into my new relationship saying, can we eat together? Mm-hmm. Without the cell phone, without the everything else. Sometimes you have to set the expectations for what you feel are the essentials in the relationship.
What if both of you guys came from not a very good background in relationships? So how do you
come in together?
Yeah, how do you? But it's
your agreement.
Yeah, I see a lot of relationships where they're struggling, but they don't know what to do.
They don't know why they're struggling,
and they don't know what to do to make it better. One doesn't want counseling; they don't want to go see anyone, but yet they don't know where the disconnect is.
Then that's when you go to therapy. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's no other way. You have to yield to somebody that you are going to allow to pour into your marriage or your relationship, period. So whether that's a therapist or a pastor or an imam or whatever it is, or whoever it is, if it's grandma, big mom, or somebody else, sometimes people have marriage mentors. So that's another option. Instead of, because some people don't feel comfortable going to a therapist for whatever the reasons, then who are you allowing to pour into your relationship or your marriage that has some insight that's over you, you know, that's higher than your knowledge? And if you don't have that, then I don't see how the relationship is working anyway. Again, when we're talking about marriage, God has to be over the marriage. And if you're not able to submit to God, it's supposed to be God, the husband, and the wife.
Everybody
don't want to go there.
it's like a lot. I would think a lot of marriages do not have God in it.
They don't. And they're hanging on by a string.
Yeah. So it's unfortunate. So you don't have God, like you don't serve to some God or serve to some person or worship in some way. Then you come from I don't want to say dysfunctional, but a background where it wasn't healthy, and now you're married, and your relationship is unhealthy, and you don't want to get counseling. Right. People just don't want to.
Recognize? People don't want to face the truth because
that's
know.
Not recognized. That's not recognizing.
Yeah, maybe if you want to look at that.
Okay,
I said face. You said recognize. Same, sisters, auntie.
Okay,
all right.
People just don't want to face the fact that.
Right, that they have issues and now they have to address them. So if I go to therapy, I have to address that. I have to acknowledge that I have an issue, but I really don't have an issue because I've made it this far. My family made it through and we're okay and we didn't have to talk to anyone. So why should I now need to talk to someone about my relationship? I'll make it through just like my parents made it through.
But their parents didn't make it. Their parents were two separate households.
But that's what you know, and that's what you feel comfortable. You already have in your mind how your relationship basically is going to go.
So we have to start turning around how people view and look at relationships and what's good, what's bad, and how we perceive certain things, like therapy. And if you said, if you're not going to actually go and get therapy from someone, then pick up a book. Educate yourself, right?
Get yourself a mentor.
Take a course.
Yep.
Take a training, something.
Do a self-assessment, too.
Yeah.
But everybody is not ready to do an honest self-assessment, like you said, Jason, because if you look at and do that honest assessment, you become aware of all of these issues. You can become aware and not change. You know that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You can become aware of all the issues that are that you need to address. You can be like, yep, finance, yep, relationship, yep, this, yep, that, and be like, okay, well, we're going to keep going. And you don't have to change. Change takes work. You know, it's a process to change. Change comes in stages. And so some people are not ready. You have to be ready for change. If you're not ready for change. And if you don't have the tools to change, then you will not change. You yourself, and again, we can't talk about the relationship unless we're talking about the self, because it's still object. You're right. Two objects right. in a relationship, and no object will change unless one of the objects changes. And so are you ready to change one? Do you feel like you need change? How about that?
Right, right.
Are
right.
you aware? Are you aware? And then yeah. do you feel like you need to change? And then are you ready to change? And do you have the tools to change?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Change is tough. I mean, yeah. we throw that word around. We always say, oh, we need to change. We need to change this and change that. But deep down inside, you're right. We were having a conversation yesterday about changing and recognizing that I want something better out of my relationship. And I change, and how do I get my partner to also change or suggest that, hey, this is working for me. Maybe you try this. And
he means in another podcast.
Yeah, and then we can try this in a, it's still a conversation.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then I'm working on me, and maybe you can work on you, and then we can work on us. So, yeah. And that'll work if we're willing to do that self-assessment. But that part hurts. When you start looking in the mirror, and the mirror start telling you exactly who you are, deep down inside, you know who you are. You just don't want to verbalize and then come to the realization of who you are. You're fine with putting on a front and a mask and all this other stuff, but that hurts.
Okay, so now what about those people out there who want relationships, but for some reason can't get relationships, or they can't stay in relationships?
They all jacked
so
up.
So one person, what did she say? She was...
That is not true, Jason. It's not always because somebody is jacked up.
You said start with us.
Oh, so. People often think that, you know, they forget that the one common underlining factor in each relationship is them. What advice would you give someone who's constantly in different relationships? Yes. Can't get that
what
one.
What you almost say, Jason? War.
What you think she gonna say, Jason?
They messed up.
One word.
Jacked up.
Therapy.
Yep. See.
Mm-hmm, therapy. I'm gonna take you back to therapy because again, and all of those things that we just talked about. If you don't want to go to therapy. To gain the insight into your behavior. So when we talk about change, I wanted to share this. Thoughts, feelings, and behaviors have to change. If the thoughts and the feelings don't change, the behavior will not change.
All right.
We have to change all of those things. And so we have to notice our patterns. That's what we're doing in therapy, in family therapy, in couples therapy, even in individual therapy. What are you thinking? What are your core beliefs? Do you have negative core beliefs? Like, I'm unlovable.
Exactly.
So who can challenge that, even if somebody presents love to you?
That's true.
But you feel that you're unlovable inherently. My mama didn't love me. My dad didn't love me. Right. Nobody can meet my needs. I don't love myself.
Right. Mm. That was part of the podcast, too, understanding that we need to self-love.
Yep.
Yeah, we want love. We want somebody to complete us. But then in the back of our minds, we feel like we're not worthy of love.
Right.
We're already complete.
No, people. That's what I'm saying. Right. People are thinking they want somebody to complete them.
Right.
And they're not realizing that you have to come in the relationship complete. You're looking for someone to compliment you. Right. Yeah. Right. See, that's what people are thinking. They're thinking like, oh, okay, I'm a half a person, or I'm looking for love for somebody to complete me. But in actuality, if you don't go into a relationship complete, the relationship is not going to complete you.
Right.
Because you have to be that complete person.
Right. Because no one can make you happy all the time.
Huh?
That's that song, 50-50 Love. We don't need 50-50 love. We need 100-100 love.
That's right. Exactly what we need.
That's right. That's right.
Don't give me half your love. I want it all.
That's sick. All right, so how have you applied these things that you've learned in your relationship?
Oh boy.
What you say?
Tonight, and we're coming to a close. I think I hear my mama calling my name.
So how do you recognize the unhealthy and the healthy things in your relationship going forward, right? Right? Picking a mate and understanding the things that maybe are unhealthy, and then how do we make them right?
Okay. So what I have seen in being reared as a child in my parents' household is that some patterns that I have seen in my mom and my dad, I have repeated. Some healthy, some unhealthy, okay, right?
Right, yep, right.
I sure have.
So
that four block radius, them four walls.
My mom, Exactly. And so my mom yells at my dad sometimes, well, a lot of times.
And that's normal. And that's normal, right? That's your normalcy.
That's normal for me. That's normal for me.
Right.
And that's the way that she's heard. And that's the way that she witnessed her mom being heard, because she used to yell at them as children. And I don't know what she did with the, I don't know if my grandma yelled at granddad, because I never witnessed them together, but I believe so. Or maybe she didn't have a voice with granddad, because granddad was like the one and only, you know.
Right. What he said went.
And she was young, like 12. So again, he's older. He's a man. You respect him, and he's your bread and butter, because my grandma did not work. So then she didn't have a voice. So then my mom comes into this relationship with my dad, and she has a voice. And she has some degrees, and she has some other.
So, and she had that attitude.
Right.
So she's backing up. But she's, I don't know what she's thinking about all that, but she knows that she needs some needs met. And the way that she has received her needs met before is by, again, that crying and yelling as a baby and getting those needs met. Sometimes those are met, sometimes those aren't. Y'all saw the video.
Right.
So now dad now slowed down the conversation. So dad is the calm, patient one. And he'll slow down the conversation and say, what do you need? He doesn't yell back. When there's high emotionality in the house, it's usually just my mom. Now, if dad was a high emotionality too, then we'll have chaos and probably maybe sometimes domestic violence. That's what usually occurs when the voice starts, not everyone.
Right.
Because some people just get loud and curse and whatever, lead to physical violence. But sometimes the high emotionality and anxiety does lead to other things. So anyway, dad calms that down and asks mom, again, this is kind of therapeutic. What do you need? Write down your top three things that you need for me to show you that I love you. But every person may or may not have that insight.
We're relating back to you, right? We're getting back to you. Okay.
We're getting back to me.
Okay. Because you talk about your parents.
So when I find myself yelling or getting highly upset, high emotionally upset with the person that I'm in a relationship with, then I have to say, I'm sorry. I'm noticing like that came from my reactions that I've normally had in my parents' relationship that I'm now mimicking in future relationships. Then I have to come back and say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. And actually, I felt this when you did that. Mm. And some of that not only came from noticing and doing my own work, but some of that came because I'm a therapist and that's what I do every day. And so how can I then do that? Because that doesn't come natural and normal to me to say, I feel mad or sad when you do that. That's vulnerability. And people don't like to be vulnerable, women or men. A lot of us don't like to be vulnerable in a relationship to say, I felt this way when you did this to me, because that means I allowed you into my space, and then you kind of violated the trust, safety, whatever it is. Most violated my emotions, not violate in a negative way, but you know, did something that I didn't want done to my emotions. And then that's letting you know that I'm sad versus me going up and being mad, which is, again, is more acceptable in our society. That's all y'all getting.
That was plenty.
So how does your mate respond when you escalate and bring on conflict, and then later you come back and say, I'm sorry? How does your mate respond to that?
It depends on who my mate is, because a lot of times, like I said, when you have two different people, one is high emotionality, one is not, historically, you know, or most of the time, because anybody can be escalated. But if you don't escalate when somebody else escalates, then it's a different scenario versus both of y'all escalating. So most of the times when I'm in relation, I'm with somebody that does not escalate. But let me tell you, I have been in a relationship with somebody that did escalate and it wasn't me, then I go low. So I take on like kind of like the role of dad, and they take on the role of mom with high emotionality. And then I have to talk in the calm voice like, okay, what do you need right now? Noticing their behavior, like, okay, I see you're upset.
So being a therapist.
You know, but how can we talk about what the situation is and continue the conversation? Or I'm gonna hang up right now and you call me back after you cool down, or whatever it is.
Right.
Or, you know, I'm gonna walk out and I'll come back. I'll give you a call in 5 or 10 minutes. Just giving them the space. Even if they don't take the space, you giving them the space so it does not escalate even further. Because a lot of times when high emotionality is there, then we start going low. Like,
right. Right,
and the finger snaps.
yeah. So, in relationships, as a therapist, do you find it harder because then people say, "Don't play that therapy role on it."
Right, don't try to analyze.
Yeah, right. You know, because people do feel like that. Right, that is an issue.
Let me tell you something. Ngozi is not Dr. Truth, and Dr. Truth is not Ngozi. So it's not playing a role, I promise, because sometimes I do want to go low. I'm telling you, like, I have to be real. Sometimes I do, and I can't say that I don't. I always go high. No, nobody does. So sometimes I do go low, but it's still a level to how low I'm going to go, period.
Right.
And I'm not... If I go low, I might go at the belt. I ain't gonna go below the belt. I try because I know the implications for what happened in my words. And I've always been conscious of the implications of my words because of my dad. Always talking about how the black man is being torn down in and outside of the family, in and outside of relationships. So it's certain things I would never say to a black man. I don't care how mad I am. I don't care how wrong you did me. I don't care. I will still try to stay on the topic. So I may call you a name, but it's not going to be the name that's going to make you hate the day that you was born. Like, I will never say, like, you no good. That's never going to come out of my mouth ever, because you already have that enough from society. I will never say anything like that. I'll try my best to stay on what the actual issue is. You need work on communication, sir, or whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? Or I didn't feel loved, or I didn't feel cared for when you did this, or you missed whatever it was that I thought that you should have done, or you could have called in advance, or something like that. So I try to stay on the topic most of the time. I try to stay away from name callers sometimes this happens, but I am always sure to say, I'm sorry.
So when you do take the high road, and you say, well, let's talk about it, and this is how I felt, does your mate feel like they're being analyzed, or you're playing the doctor role on them? Like, you're trying to be,
you're trying to de-escalate the situation.
No. You know how people say when you're dealing with children, you have to, what is the term? Use psychology.
Okay.
So you got to use psychology, right? We always try to use psychology when we're dealing with kids in certain situations. When you're trying to take the high road and you say, okay, let's talk about it, how did that make you feel? Does your mate sometimes feel like, don't use psychology on me?
Yes, they feel like that, but no, I don't say, tell me how you feel. That's not what I'm asking them. I'm not playing a role of therapist. I know it's very hard to do that, but yes, sometimes they do say, in my response to them, they know that that's usually not the normal response they get from other women, period.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Most people, period, are not coming back talking about how vulnerable they are and not blaming, not judging. So that's inherently different in itself.
Yes.
You know? So yes, I have received that feedback before, that you just telling me basically what I want to hear. You just making me feel good, but I'm not, and I'm not being your therapist, but I cannot say that I do not come back in my own house and analyze relationship from a therapeutic standpoint, because I do.
Right, exactly.
Sometimes I allow for more leeway and more rope than other people would, because I do understand, and that could be a downfall of my own self because I'm giving too much.
Right.
Whatever.
Well, you almost have to. You almost have to because you're a therapist, right? So
it's hard because I'm gonna feel like you
treat me like a professional versus the relationship that we're in.
Right.
That's right.
I think the mental aspect of it is we're thinking, okay, you're trying to analyze or psychologize, psychologize me. Mm-hmm. And in terms, you're just really trying to make the relationship work with the tools that you know. Right?
Yeah.
But that's not always seen. And it's hard to take, like, as she said, I give you more rope or more leeway because I am in that field, which could be a downfall. So it's hard to take off that hat. Right. Have you noticed that wearing that hat has made your relationship, harder?
or stronger with the tools, because you got some secret tools. So
yeah, but yeah. the other mate,
you're not doing this DIY. So let's just put that out there.
So the other mate may not feel like those good tools. You know, they may be like this. What do you call that?
He might be at a disadvantage, right?
Right. He's right. Going, man, he's taking again. Advantage of me, right?
She's 10 steps ahead of him.
So have you felt like it has made your relationship harder? In the relationship because of that, or it has not had an effect?
Right. I don't know. I think that some of it is just me being me. And then other things are like me using some of the therapy tools, like I said, after, to kind of look at my role. I not only analyze the person, I analyze myself too. Yeah. So I'm very critical of my own things. Like, I could have said that better, or I could have did this, or I should have did that. But again, just knowing, like, stop trying to do that. Because I've analyzed myself, now I try to be more in the moment. And that's with every interaction that I'm in. It's hard to just be in the here and now, just to feel the feelings that you feel, just to experience everything without overthinking it. Because you cannot overthink things. Like, a certain areas that you cannot control, like love. You can't control who you love, who loves you.
What do you mean you can't overthink it? Well, what is that?
You can't overthink. So some people literally, let's just talk about some women, and we want to talk about some real stuff now.
We're talking about real issues and real relationships.
There are women that kind of, I don't want to say set up men, but they have goals in mind. I'm going to be somebody at the club so I can get a new purse and new shoes. Like, and that's the goal. And or a lot of white women do this is they go to college to find a husband. And so you're doing things, you're putting yourself in positions. There are lots of women that go to red carpet events, NBA, exactly, to get a husband. They're dressing in their finest because this is what either their friends are telling them to do or their family is setting them up to do. But when you go with no, I mean, you're still going to have an intention, but I'm not going with a motive like I'm going to get this man and all his money. Like, that's not what you're going to do. And you're not like, this is what, you can't plan everything. I'm type A. But again, you cannot plan how every area of your life is going to happen or occur, or every interaction, because you can't control the other person's interaction with you.
So when you
so
say
that's
you can't,
what I mean by staying in that moment.
So when you say you can't overthink it, you mean,
sometimes I try to intellectualize something that's an emotional thing. That's a heart chakra thing. And I'm trying to intellectualize love. I can't do that. I can't analyze what's going to happen in love, because love just happens. Like they say, you can't hope who you love. Can't. I mean, you can't. It's all in the screen. Like, you fall. Then you get dumb and vulnerable and all these other things that you say you're not going to do. And you just try to take the the subjective, objective.
Yeah, you get dumb. Yeah, you get dumb. You be like, and then your friends are saying, I would have never thought you let somebody do that to you. And you go.
And you don't have an answer for them. You be like, me either.
Until you get to that stage where then you can't stand them. And you be like, enough of this being dumb.
Right.
Right. but that's what you mean by overthinking it.
And it's objective versus subjective views of yourself and views of love and the other person that you sometimes can't see because you're in it.
Right.
So yes, the therapist, Dr. Truth, does go to therapy, especially around love and those type of interactions, because again, I can't therapize myself. Man, that's a word I made up. You can't therapize yourself.
We're just making up words on this podcast, right?
You can't do DIY. You can't DIY yourself because you're too close to it. So
Exactly. Sometimes
you can do the self-assessment and self-awareness, but sometimes you can't see it because you're too close to it. You're in it.
Right. That's true. That's true. Okay. All right.
So you've given us so many different gems and, you know, told us why we need to go to therapy. We've got so many issues in our relationships and with ourselves. So tell us, how can, you know, someone get in contact with you or learn more about you? Dr. Truth, I know you're all over the place. I mean, I know you're on Facebook, Instagram, and you have your own practice. Tell us a little bit about it.
Okay. So people can get in contact with me at drtruthandassociates.com. drtruthandassociates.com. Also, I am on Instagram at I am Dr. Truth. IAMDRTRUTH, and on Facebook, and Gonzi Truth. I'm not gonna spell it.
People will not find you. You better spell it in Gonzi Truth.
No, I'll put it in the show notes.
You want to be found on Facebook? They'll be like, "What did she say?"
We'll put it in the on the Facebook group, and we'll also put it in the show notes, so they'll be able to find you.
So you do Facebook Live, right?
Yes, and I go Facebook Live.
And you're usually discussing what? What topics are you talking about when you do live?
No, I'm talking about everything. I talk about grief sometimes. I have a book on grief called Black Girls Cry. It's on Amazon and on my website. Talking about coping with grief. I talk about love. I talked about marriage with my parents, and they were married for 40 years. I talk about all different types of things. I talk about mental health, psychoeducation for mental health, and what does that look like, coping skills. Like some of what we shared today. I'll also talk about race and discrimination and Black Lives Matter, and also some anxiety, stress reducing activities that you can do, such as tapping on those meridian points to help relieve anxiety and stress. And those are good, not just for race-based anxiety, but also for any type of anxiety and stress.
And where did you get that from? Where did you learn the tapping on the stress?
That's an evidence-based practice. Ayanla Van Zandt actually has a YouTube video on it, but you can Google or go on YouTube and Google tapping, evidence-based. It's an evidence-based practice called EFT.
Okay.
But I'm always looking for tools to help us, because a lot of us, again, the research says that many minorities are going to therapy. So it's a stigma that many minorities are not. And I believe that the numbers are increasing.
Yes. Yes. With awareness.
We have waiting lists at Community Mental Health. We've always had waiting lists wherever I go. Private practice has waiting lists now. So I think we're in a different time.
Yeah.
Where even younger people are now going to therapy.
Absolutely.
So I'm seeing a lot of adolescent clients, children clients, adults, couples, and families who are now ready, and older adults, because of COVID-19 and those stressors, they are ready and open to deal with some of the stressors. Like I talked about in the beginning when I came on, a lot of times we receive less amount of treatment, and we receive it at a later time, where it's more critical, where we have not just one stressor, not just a relationship, not just our children, not just our finances, not just our house being foreclosed on, not just our job being, it's like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yeah.
We all debilitated, we laying underneath the bridge, and now we homeless. Now we're like, can you fix my life, Ayanla?
Right.
Dr.
Exactly.
True is looking at them like, I'm not Ayanla, and no, I cannot. But let's start at the beginning. How was your childhood? Well, we can, and it is a safe place when you come to therapy. Therapists don't bite. We don't bite.
And you don't judge. You don't bite. You don't judge. You just try to help, right?
Exactly. We don't blame. We don't judge. We don't make you feel guilty about not coming to therapy 10 years ago.
Rebecca said, if you had it came like 10, 15 years, you probably would be in a better boat right now, right? You don't say that. What you should have did.
Right.
But we do help you put it in a structured way where which concern would you like to talk about first? Which one is the most pressing? And then we will set up steps to help you address those items, to help you relieve some of your anxiety or stress or depression or whatever that is.
Fantastic. So just give us your title and your website one more time.
Okay. Dr. Ngozi Truth-Krishan, licensed eligible psychologist. And my website is drtruthandassociates.com.
Sounds good. All right. Any other questions, Jason?
Yeah, we got to have the doc back on.
All right. Well, we thank you for your time. Thank you so much for coming on. We truly appreciate it.
Yeah, now we got to go work with some of this stuff. Now, you done dumped all this stuff in my lap.
Because what
we
he
can take it slow, Jason.
Because what he needs to do.
Let mama fix me up.
Well, that concludes another episode of Love and Beyond the I Do podcast. And as always,
we're in it to win it.
thanks for listening to this week's episode of Lovin' Beyond the I Do podcast. Head over to iTunes to subscribe and leave a review. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Legendary Relationship or visit our website at legendaryrelationship.com. Till next time, remember to make every day count.